Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
9:09 now on this Christmas Eve Eve. And we're going to talk about the measles vaccine and skepticism and what happened in Samoa as a case study. And as we prepare to do that, I'm looking at a story from NOLA.com, and you may have heard about it in our news. State health officials saying Louisiana residents should decide for themselves whether to get vaccinated, especially for COVID-19 and influenza. And also, Dr. Ralph Abraham has talked about the side effects that have been proven false. Dr. Ralph Abraham is the state surgeon general, as appointed by Governor Jeff Landry. And politics and science never get along, and that was never proven more, I don't think, than what happened here with the levees in Katrina. The Corps of Engineers in Vicksburg did studies, and they told Congress, well, we can build the flood walls this way, but this is what's going to happen. And Congress said, well, we're not going to give you the money you need to build them like you think they need to be built. So build the T-walls. Here's the money we gave you. And we all know what happened after Katrina. Katrina was not an event that hit the city. Katrina missed New Orleans. It's the catastrophic failure of the levees that did this the city in. Likewise, when it comes to politics and anti-vaxxers and saying what you want to be instead of what is, and quoting celebrities and discredited doctors and sticking with that, because, you know, a long time ago, I was talking to a longtime politician who said some people are leaders and they actually lead. Other people see which way the crowd is headed. They jump in front and they call themselves a leader. And I think that's what we have going on sometimes when it comes to vaccines and the medical community. With all that said, we welcome in Brian Deer, investigative journalist, author of The Doctor Who Fooled the World, who is in London. So with that, I'll say happy Christmas and welcome, Brian.
Happy Christmas, Tommy. Good morning to you.
Tell me, I think you have a hell of a story to tell. I think the people, I feel bad if their children are autistic, and that's something they're dealing with. But I also don't think that it should be used to cite a discredited paper and then risk anything that would bring these diseases back. And now I see that RFK Jr. at one point talked about re-examining the polio vaccine, of all things, which I always use as the ultimate litmus test of vaccines, and if people would still feel the same way. I was shocked to see that. President Trump subsequently saying the polio vaccine's not going anywhere. But with all of that being said, Brian, I want to hear your experience in Samoa and what happened and so forth.
Well, I was out there back in 2019. It was just weeks before the coronavirus pandemic was first reported from Wuhan, China. And there was an outbreak of measles that killed 83 people, most of them, nearly all of them, small children. The population there had found that their vaccination rates had declined very dramatically due to really the local government's inaction. And for reasons best known to himself, Robert Kennedy turns up and starts agitating in the area. First, he got there before the outbreak. And then when the outbreak began and children were dying and the government had closed the roads and shut all the businesses, it was very, very similar to what happened with the pandemic of COVID around the world. Kennedy then decided to write to them saying that he thought these children were dying because of the vaccine and not because of measles virus. Totally crazy stuff. But, you know, this thing has become a cult and people have adopted these very strange ideas. And he waded right into it in an outbreak that really he and his associates in the United States have a lot to answer for.
Let's go back to this whole controversy with the measles vaccine and what started this and how it quickly spread. And even though the person that the doctors understand it that started it retracted the research, it still lives on.
Well, he never retracted it.
I thought he did.
It was retracted, but not by him. What happened was the British government has an organization called the Legal Aid Board, and it funds people who are not able to afford their own lawyers. And what happened was a very small town lawyer in the UK, which is where this whole vaccine thing started, way back in the late 1990s, got a grant from this this agency to investigate the possibility that vaccines were causing illnesses of various kinds. He hired a doctor at a London hospital, a man named Andrew Wakefield, to perform research. And the research turned out to be a paper published in a medical journal. It was just 12 children reporting on. And what this doctor had done was basically to rig the whole thing, where he got a bunch of people who were complainants against the vaccine to turn up with their children, and then essentially made up a connection between the vaccine and autism. Later, I began an investigation for the Sunday Times of London here, and we discovered the ugly truth behind it, that the whole thing had been rigged. And then there was a medical board hearing that went on for like 217 days. And this guy lost his license, and the paper was retracted, not by him, but by the journal that published it, The Lancet. They retracted it after the General Medical Council in the UK threw this guy out of medicine and ended his career forever. And he then set off for the United States and continued to work his mischief there, based in Austin, Texas.
And you wrote a book about this, did you not?
I did. The Doctor Who Fooled the World, Great Christmas Gift, too late for Amazon probably though by now. I've investigated the whole vaccine controversy since it goes back into the 1970s and the 1980s. There was a previous concern about vaccines then, again beginning in the United Kingdom and then crossing the pond to America and spreading there, and then from America to the rest of the world. That passed away as people realized that it was baseless. And then in the 1990s, as a result of this man Wakefield's activities and the lawyer's activities, a new scare took off over the measles, mumps and rubella triple vaccine, alleging a link with autism. And that is now traveling the world. Eventually it got to Samoa, and it's now the mainstay of the anti-vaccine movement, along with their opposition to COVID vaccination.
You know, people want to make up whatever they want. It seems these days they want to ignore science, and they think that if you say something once or twice or three times, then all of a sudden it becomes true, which is not the case when it comes to science. And I'm sure that you that this is what your book talks about, right? How you go into this, how those that our anti-vaxxers would have you believe that it's about the money that provides the vaccinations or that fuels the vaccinations, when in fact, it's kind of the opposite. Is it not that it's the rigged research that's money fueled, or that they're in it for the money? Talk to me about all of that, yes, Andrew, if you would.
Yes, there's an enormous number.
Brian, if you would, not Andrew, God bless, forbid. Brian talked to me about it.
There's an enormous amount of honest work being done to try and make sure that vaccines are very safe. And in fact, compared with other pharmaceutical products, they are very safe. I've noticed over the years I've been looking into this issue that there's a certain kind of person. Donald Trump really did well in spotting these people who feel disempowered, people who feel neglected, people who perhaps don't feel they have a lot of control over their lives, and believing that the vaccine controversy gives some of those something to believe in, something that gives them the sense that they are aware of some special wisdom, that they've got some special knowledge or insight into the way the world really is. And I think that's really what characterizes this cult. I mean, when I first started off more than 20 years ago, I thought, well, who are the people who are anti-vaccine then? And I realized at the time it was people who it was important to them to feel that they were smarter than doctors. That's really what they all had in common. They felt they were smarter than doctors. And some of them may well have been smarter than doctors, but playing the percentages, people, you know, usually we're not smarter than doctors on medical issues. So that's what they were then. But now it's kind of migrated into a fully fledged cult where people get a sense of self-empowerment, of control, of membership of a secret society of people who see the way the world really is. And that, to me, is what characterizes the classic anti-vaxxer. Although there are a lot of people, of course, who are just skeptical of vaccines because of things they've heard, or stories they've heard, or the fact that the media talks about it at all can cause some people to become concerned. So it's not like one particular group of people. There's all kinds of people involved in this thing. But at its heart, it is a cult.
What made you decide to go through the steps that you did to write this book?
Well, it all began with a routine newspaper assignment. I mean, I've been an investigative journalist with the Sunday Times going back into the 80s. You know, I'm so old, the paper was printed in Latin when it first published, so and I was there. So I was just given this routine assignment to look into what was at the time in the 1990s, the dominant public health concern. There was a huge scare over this measles, mumps and rubella vaccine in the 1990s in the UK that then spread across the Atlantic and to the rest of the world. And I was just asked to look into it, and I just found it completely extraordinary. I mean, this guy not only faked his research, he'd taken out a patent on his own vaccine before he did it. He was being paid enormous amounts of money by the lawyers at weekly rates, and he would get more money the longer he kept this thing going. So there was layer upon layer of misconduct involved in this thing that I just found absolutely fascinating. And other people around the world found it so interesting. And so, you know, you're speaking to me today, and I find that interesting.
I think we're almost in a Alice in Wonderland kind of thing behind the looking glass, because it seems as though, and we'll pick it up here when we come back, that some people, as this cult goes, and I agree with you, I think it is a cult, and I think we have a pediatrician here in town, Dr. Corey Hebert, comes on with us often, and he says, well, I wouldn't go into your house and try to wire it. If you're an electrician, I wouldn't pretend to tell you how to be an electrician, because I'm not trained in that. I would never go to balance your books or do your taxes, because I'm not an accountant. I'm not trained in that. So where in the world do you become empowered to think that you know as much as somebody that's been to medical school for all of these years and is privy to all of this research that has been done? And I think you're right. I think it does, Brian, come to a feeling of empowerment where all of a sudden, well, you know what? I am on an equal basis with you, when in fact I'm not. And I think also conspiracy theories enter into this. And what I meant by inside the looking glass is that when you talk about cover-ups, smear campaigns, gagging lawsuits, people tend to think that that's on the side of the legitimate medical research, when in fact, when we come back, you can talk about how that's actually the money-making scheme is on the other side of it at the expense of public health. We'll also talk about Samoa and more. We're talking to Brian Deer, investigative journalist, author of The Doctor Who Fooled the World. They're closer to Christmas than we are, because he's in London, but still, we're all pretty close. 2019, a measles outbreak swept through the tiny nation of Samoa, killed over 80 people, many of them very young children. RFK played a role in fueling anti-vaccination sentiment, and we'll talk more about that when we come back. Tommy Tucker, glad you're with us, WWL. 927, Tommy Tucker. Those of you that listen regularly know that I've often referred to this fraud in England that faked research about autism links to the measles vaccine. That he never retracted it. The Lancet retracted and said all of the research was fake, that none of it was true. The so-called researcher, the con man, I'll call him Andrew Wakefield, is alive and living in Austin, Texas, as I understand it. Our guest, Brian Deer, investigative journalist, wrote a book, The Doctor Who Fooled the World, about this. And he's with us now from England. Brian, tell me about Sherry Tenpenny, will you?
Oh, yeah, Sherry Tenpenny, one of the high priestesses.
Seems like a character, first of all, out of some kind of spoof movie, but this is serious stuff. This is true.
Yes, she is one of the inner circle. She describes, she's actually listed the inner circle as including herself and this man Wakefield and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. as being the inner circle of the anti-vaccine movement. And during the COVID pandemic, she was appearing on television saying that that the COVID vaccine contained a metal piece inside it, which was making people magnetic. And she actually appeared with a nurse on television in Ohio, where they were demonstrating that keys would stick to people, only they kept falling off. It was it was hilarious at one level. But Dr. Tenpenny, and she is a doctor, although her medical board have suggested that she ought to see a psychiatrist, she was saying that COVID was going to kill at least 50 million people by the end of 2023. So I don't think anybody's noticed that yet, but no, absolute crackpot. And there are a lot of people. I sometimes describe it, although it's important not to stigmatize everyone who has concerns about vaccines. There could be all kinds of reasons why they would, and it's not always irrational. But there are a group of people who are attracted to this subject in a way that I would say that the whole controversy is what I would call a crank magnet. It draws a certain sort of person towards it. They seems that they're able to find credibility among the people that this movement is able to kind of mesmerize, if you like. As I say, there are people who've got genuine concerns, and at the end of the day, doctors have a tendency to care about their patients, and scientists do actually try and search for the truth, unlike attorneys. Attorneys, as I'm sure you know, lawyers are there to win a case. They're not necessarily there to find the truth, but scientists, by and large, want to find out the truth. And, you know, if I wanted to get advice on aircraft safety, I would go to somebody who knew something about aircraft, preferably a pilot. I wouldn't go to the person sitting next to me because they were specialists in, I don't know, food hygiene or something.
Well, you know, I looked up RFK Jr.'s bio, and he's got a couple of law degrees and an economics degree, as I understand it. I don't think he's a stupid man, but I don't think he's a scientist either. I think he is part of this cult, and I'm reading your story here from the New York Times. And this is what Robert Kennedy Jr. had to say in January 2021. He said, three-point checklist that had to be met for him to consider a COVID vaccine. You take one shot, you get lifetime immunity. Side effects are one in a million. Third, herd immunity is achieved at 70% public uptake. Nobody in this society ever gets the disease again. If they came up with that product, he said, I'd be happy to look at it. I'm reading it to your last sentence here. It says his audience laughed, but it's not funny. And as you talk about lawyers, Brian, you know, when you're, I don't know if you're a parent or not, but you have to go sign a release when you get your, first of all, it's hard enough as a parent because you're holding a child down and a pediatrician is giving them their vaccinations and you feel as though the child is looking at you for help and you feel as though you're deserting them when in fact, that's part of being a parent, part of being a leader. You're doing what's best for them long term. But you got to sign the paper that talks about possible side effects this, possible side effects that. And the irony has always got to me how people will be so hesitant to take a vaccine because there may be side effects. But yet, Viagra, other ED medications, they'll eat like M&Ms without a second thought.
Absolutely. And what people perhaps don't realize is that the safety of vaccines is constantly being monitored in huge research exercises, largely conducted by the HMOs, because they have enormous amounts of data on side effects arising from vaccines, as they do with all drugs. And they simply are not getting, and we're talking about studies embracing millions of children, they're simply seeing no sign of, for example, autism. And they would see a sign. If it was there, they would see it. And they don't see it. And the only time it's actually ever been seen has been in research which was retracted in the UK as fraudulent.
As far as the lawyers go, has a successful case ever been brought against a vaccine manufacturer for causing autism?
No, not one. There was one child where years ago where there were autistic features, but the actual compensation that was given to them was for a brain illness. But there has never been a case that's ever been accepted by the United States or indeed the UK as being a link between autism and the vaccine. No,
so
it just
hasn't
happened.
As you say, lawyers, that makes me think that argument collapses on itself, because if, as you look at asbestos, as you look at this medication, mesh for surgery, whatever the hell it is you see the lawyers advertising for, if there was a legitimate case to be made for the measles vaccines causing autism, you would think a cottage industry would have sprung up among attorneys seeking compensation for those, quote, victims, right?
Yes, there was back in 2007. There was a class action held in Washington, D.C., where I think it was 4,800 families had come forward as a result of publicity and the issues coming out of the UK, wondering if their child had been injured by the vaccines and registering for this lawsuit. And they couldn't find a single case to bring forward where a child, you could say, yes, this child has been injured in this way by this vaccine. They simply couldn't find one out of 4,800 children. It isn't there. The signal isn't there, but the myth continues.
So skeptics say the vaccines are being pushed because it's a big money maker. But in essence, or actually in actuality, the anti-vaxxer movement is a big money maker for the people pushing that anti-vaxxer sentiment. Is it not?
Absolutely. I mean, Robert Kennedy started an organization for which the last paycheck I saw he was getting, he was earning $500,000 a year to be the chairman of this 501c3 not-for-profit. And that's big money. And he was doing legal work on the side. And the interesting thing, particularly about vaccines, is that the lawsuits and the interest by lawyers actually preceded the public alarm. It wasn't the public concern over a vaccine or over any product that led to the lawyers getting involved. It was the lawyers who got involved in the first place and provoked the whole thing by getting public attention to their claims.
Before we let you go, I would like you to take us to what you went through in Samoa and put us on the ground there, because I think, you know, one person would be anecdotal, but I think what you went through in Samoa is a case study. Would that be accurate, Brian?
Yes, it was like a natural experiment of what would happen if measles got into an unvaccinated population. The measles virus had got there from New Zealand, where there'd been anti-vaccine campaigning in the south side of Auckland, got into Samoa, and it ripped through that community. And I spent most of the week, I was there for, I don't know, 10 days, 11 days, something like that. And I spent a whole week of it just talking to the mothers of children who died. And the photographer I was with said, oh, you know, you want to be careful about this. You could find this psychologically disturbing. I said, no. Journalists cover wars. Why should we care? And he flew off to Thailand, where he'd come from, and left me in the Samoan capital of Apia on a Sunday afternoon. And I went up to the local church there. And I sat down and I could not stop crying. I was overwhelmed by the grief that had accumulated in me just listening to parents as to what it's like to lose your child to measles. And I'll never forget that.
So for those who think that it's the anti-vaxxers that are trying to be silenced, or that is under big pressure to be silenced and facing all kind of nuisance suits, this, that, the other thing. If you can, before we let you go, a brief description of what you had to go through to get this book published and do your research.
Oh, I was been bombarded with abuse and threats and accusations that I'm working for the drug industry and every kind of abuse. Two lawsuits that were brought against me, both were defeated, two totally frivolous lawsuits. The anti-vaccine movement at its heart, and this doesn't include everybody who's concerned about vaccines, but at its heart, this organization, if you like, is extraordinarily well-funded and very determined. And at its heart, you'll find that there are people making big money out of it.
So is it about really being anti-vaccination and protecting children, which I answer my own question here, Brian? It couldn't be because it's anything but. This is a big money-making operation, bottom line. Accurate?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you, Brian. I appreciate your time. Investigative journalist, author of The Doctor Who Fooled the World. It's about the discredited Andrew Wakefield. I would suggest you get the book and educate yourself and make an informed decision when it comes to kids. If you want to believe that there are space people visiting or that dogs can talk, I guess that's one thing. But when it affects the public health, that's something different entirely. Again, Brian, thank you and happy Christmas. Happy New Year.
Thank you, Tommy. Take care.
You bet. We'll take a break, come back, talk to Jeff Palermo about LSU and the transfer portal. 940, 20 till 10. Traffic now, WWL.
Looking nice for your morning commute? From the Acadian Windows and Hurricane Shutters WWL Traffic Center, I'm Joe Cardosi. The Bonnie Carey Spillway is looking good as you head in from Laplace and smooth sailing on I-10 both east and westbound. The causeway is flowing freely to and from the North Shore. As you head in from Slidell, you're moving well across the Twin Spans and no delays across the high-rise as you head in from the east. The Claiborne Flyover is a little bit slow going, but the Pontchartrain Expressway is moving well between the CBD and the Crescent City Connection as you head to the westbound. The Crescent City Connection has no delays to or from the West Bank, and the Huey P, also free and clear. With your look at traffic, I'm Joe Cardosi.
947, 13 till 10, Tommy Tucker, WWL, on Christmas Eve. Joined now by the jolly old elf himself, Jeff Palermo. How you doing, Jeff?
Hey, I'm doing well, Tommy. How about yourself?
I don't know why I called you an elf. Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. You ready for the holidays or not? Jeff?
I'm sorry, Tommy. Say that one more time. I'm so sorry.
You ready for the holidays?
I'm ready, man. I am ready to. I'm not a big fan of the whole midweek Christmas thing. Kind of wish you had kind of a 4-day weekend somewhere around there. Give me at least three, but. Hey, take what I can get.
Well, in this business, it's different, but I think a lot of people are taking advantage and taking 2 weeks off, like starting today and going back on the 6th.
Yes.
But
yeah.
Not Brian Kelly, not LSU, not the transfer portal. Tell me what's going on.
Well, man, LSU's been really busy. I mean, they've been one of the more aggressive teams in the transfer portal, and there's probably a couple more guys that they're going to get here before it's all said and done. But you know, they went into this offseason with a bunch of areas where they had to make some additions. They had to find some guys that could start right away. And I think they've been able to do that, including one of the recent signees that they got, Braylon Moore. They needed a new starting center, DJ Chester. Not really what we've seen from him this season, not a center. He could maybe be a really good guard, but he struggled at the center position. So you get a guy in Braylon Moore from Virginia Tech who will likely right now that you could plug in there as your starting center. You needed to get some wide receivers. They were able to get that in Berrian Brown and Nick Anderson and Destin Hill, a bit of a wild card. Former Edna Carr player. They needed a new starting tight end to replace Mason Taylor. They get one from Oklahoma in Bauer Sharp. They needed a new punter, Tommy, and they get one in Grant Chadwick, who was one of the better punters in the country this season from Middle Tennessee. Needed some edge rushers. Jamari Butler from Nebraska, Jack Pyburn from Florida. Needed a backup quarterback. Got that from Mississippi State, Michael Van Buren, who started 8 games for the Bulldogs this past season. So also needed some help at the defensive tackle position. Sidere Mitchell, who was at Texas, coming now over to LSU. So they need. There was a lot of needs. There's still some more. You still would like to see them get a safety. They certainly need a safety here, and they've swung and missed on a couple of guys. So, and they probably need another offensive tackle. They need. You're losing both of them here, and Will Campbell and Emory Jones. Both of those guys are heading to the NFL a year early, so they're still shopping for that here during this holiday season. But based on what LSU's been able to do right now and getting 13 players out of the transfer portal, expect them to get at least a couple more.
Who have they lost, and how does who they gain affect who might enter? Is it too late for players to enter the portal?
No, it's not too late for players to enter the portal. You can enter all the way through December 28th. And in fact, once LSU plays its final game on December 31st, there's then another, I think it's 4 or 5 day period where players can get into it. Now, you can sign any player out of the transfer portal pretty much at any time you want to sign one. So there's no really restrictions on signing them, but for a player, they have to get into it either by December 28th or by the 4 days after their team plays its final game. So even some of these teams that are in New Year's Day bowl games or the playoff teams, some of the players that are there, once their season ends, the loser of the Sugar Bowl, Tommy, those players then would have 4 days to decide whether they want to get into the transfer portal. So and then the national championship game's not till like January 20th or something like that. So, you still got until, I mean, this thing's open. It keeps opening every time you look at it. And then there's another spring transfer portal window period, and that runs from April 16th to the 25th. But really, you want to do your heavy lifting when it comes to adding players out of the portal right now so that you got them involved. Not only in this upcoming semester, but also involved in spring football. And you got a better idea of what your roster will look like for the following fall based on what you're able to do here during this transfer portal period.
So every action has a reaction, right? And I'm wondering about players being added from the transfer portal that wouldn't then cause other players to leave, or is it because they have the openings there and that's why they're coming to begin with?
Well, I would certainly, I think a lot of players, when you look at LSU's, let's just take LSU's case, for example. You got 17 players that are in the transfer that have, that were on the roster in 2024 that have entered a transfer portal. And I would say in most of these cases, a lot of these players just kind of looked at it and said, you know what, I just don't have much of a chance to play here, and I just want to go find somewhere else. And they had a sense of that even before they knew who was transferring in. Now, there's been a couple guys that, certainly would have played a lot next season that got in, C.J. Daniels, Kamorian Pimpton, two guys that certainly would have played a lot next season. I would say Deshaun Womack, who ended up transferring to Ole Miss, an edge rusher for Maryland. I mean, those were guys that you were looking at as, okay, these guys are set to play next season. Sage Ryan, I'm sure if he decided to come back, he would be in the mix. But I think, a lot of people, a lot of these players are using this transfer portal period I've put some work on game tape. Other colleges can look at it, and now they can go out there basically as a free agent and try to see if they can't not only find maybe a better spot where they might see some playing time or find a defense that might fit their skill set or an offense that might fit their skill set better, but maybe the biggest thing is by going into the transfer portal, it's an opportunity for them to get more NIL dollars. And so a lot of that is what kind of drives this as well, and I think in the cases of a C.J. Daniels or a Kamorian Pimpton, I think that's what drove a lot of their decisions to get into the transfer portal.
Do we know how much of this with LSU is NIL driven, the people they're getting? And is that like a public record or something or not really?
Not a public record. These agreements are not in the public. But here's what we know. I mean, LSU had a lot of money. tied with NIL dollars that were supposed to go to Bryce Underwood, Cade Phillips, Jakeem Stewart. Those were three guys that they were recruiting that didn't come up that didn't come to LSU. So that frees up money for them to now use that in the transfer portal. Also, Will Campbell, Mason Taylor, those guys were getting a lot of NIL dollars out of LSU. They're now headed to the NFL. That frees up some even more money. Plus, LSU just has more money this year. They did a better job in preparing for this period so they can attack the portal, and that's what you're seeing.
All about managing the cap, huh, Jeff?
Yeah. I don't know what the cap is. I don't know what that cap is, but apparently there is one. But
maybe the account.
Still, LSU has been very aggressive.
The cap is what you have. Thank you, Jeff. Have a Merry Christmas.
All right. Thank you, Tommy. Merry Christmas.
Same to you, sir. 9:55 back in a flash, WWL.